Today on Rainbow Country, my most recent interview with Canadian music icon Carol Pope, my exit interviews from Big Brother Canada continues. This week, Canadian boxing heavyweight champion Dylan Big Country Carman and host of Big Brother Canada, Arissa Cox. Plus, music from LGBT recording artists from around the world. Stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio Toronto Style right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, I'm Mary John Torrey, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
No matter who you are, no matter what you do, everyone has a story to tell. And right here on this LGBT show is where it all starts. We lift our voices, share our stories, and we'll raise our pride. After all, we've come a long way since 1969 and the Stonewall riots, to the legalization of same-sex marriage, to the recognition of trans equality. I'm Mark Tara. Join me on this journey through Rainbow Country. To CIUT 89.5 FM. This is the station's gay radio show, Rainbow Country, giving voice to the LGBT community. I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm Mark Tara. A little bit about me. I am an LGBT content creator. I'm also a recording artist. Let's get social. Get interactive on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. Do you want to be on Rainbow Country? Do you want me to play your music? All that sort of good stuff. Shoot me an email, mark@marktara.com. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes as well as on podomatic.com. And again, everything is hooked up through my website, marktara.com, marktara.com. So, CIUT Spring Membership Drive, it's done for the next few months. So if you have made a donation, a heartfelt thank you to you, yes, you. If you haven't made a donation and you might be so inclined, just head over to CIUT.fm and hit the donation button. It's thanks to you that CIUT has been on the air for 30 years. The Inside Out LGBT Film Festival runs from May 25th to June 4th. For more information, go to insideout.ca. So this is episode 48. On this episode, my exit interviews from Big Brother Canada 5, they continue. Today, Canada's boxing heavyweight champion, Dylan Big Country Carman, was a contestant on Big Brother. So we'll hear from him, his exit interview, as well as the host of Big Brother Canada, Arissa Cox. Plus, my most recent interview from Canadian music icon Carol Pope. Gotta love her. And, as usual, we'll hear music from some LGBT recording artists. Today, I'm going to play, hopefully, a couple tracks from Rye Daisies. So, my friends, are you ready? Because this journey through Rainbow Country begins right now with Big Brother Canada.
This is City Councillor Kristen Wong Tam, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Rainbow Country, Dylan, Big Country Carmen, Canadian.
What's up, brother?
Canadian boxing heavyweight champion, and now yeah. Big Brother Canada top five finisher.
Sounds so good.
Dylan, my first question for you. Do you think your boxing experience helped you with your Big Brother Canada game?
Yeah, I think so. Just, you know, the mental, emotional, and physical toll that a boxing career takes on you, I think it translated well into the Big Brother house for sure.
So, Dylan, you played a season of Big Brother Canada that was made up of both returning players and new players like yourself. When you first realized that you'd be playing with both returning players and new players, what went through your mind, Dylan?
I was just super excited to see them walk through the door. That because I'm a Big Brother fan, so to see all the people that I was a fan of prior to this show walking in the house, I was so excited to see them walk in.
So, Dylan, going into the Big Brother Canada house, did you have a game plan mapped out before you went into the Big Brother Canada house?
Actually, before I went in, I was really going to try to, you know, I knew I was going to have a target on my back just being as big as I am and the champ. I knew I was going to have a target, so I was really trying to kind of stay as low as possible, like lay as low as possible, kind of under the radar as best as I could, being 6'6". But that was kind of my plan. Just I didn't want to be too much of a physical threat or look like too much of a physical threat or any of that. So it was more just trying to lay low and kind of adapt to each situation as best I could.
So, Dylan, let's talk about your experience in the Big Brother Canada house. What was the toughest part of being part of this experience?
Like I said, the physical, mental, and emotional toll that this game takes on you. People that haven't been in the house can't really relate it. It's hard to understand how hard it is to be in that house, you know? And I feel like just the mental and emotional toll that it takes on you day after day, I think that was the toughest part, just trying to adapt to those emotions.
And what about your favorite memory from the Big Brother Canada house, Dylan?
Definitely my favorite memory and moment was when my mom came into the house with my dog. Obviously, you could see it brought tears to my eyes, and it was just, it's hard to explain the emotion that I was feeling at that time in words. Like, it was the most amazing moment of my life, for sure.
Well, Dylan, congrats on everything, and thank you so much for your time.
No worries. Thank you so much.
Arissa Cox, first of all, I want to say on a personal note, girl, I have to say this.
Oh.
As I am a multiracial person, and I just want to say to you, thank you for being who you are and having the platform that you do on a national level, because when I look at you, Arissa, my hair is crazy like yours. And I see I see aspects of myself in you. So thank you so much. As a person that's multiracial, thank you so much for representing.
Oh my God!
And doing it,
and
doing it with class, doing it with class, and with doing it, nailing it, slaying it.
Wow! I'm so honored to say that, and I am so thrilled. Like, I am as thrilled as you are. Every day I wake up and I can't believe. That, you know, hard work and education and being good to the people you work with have landed me here in my career. It's been such a thrill to work on a show that has the profile that it does. And I feel that too. I feel the need to be somebody on TV that people don't usually see. People don't usually see an Afro on TV or somebody who, you know, tries to pull it off. So I'm thrilled and that you say that, and I'm very, very touched. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Thank you. So you guys are in the process of getting ready for the Big Brother Canada 5 finale.
Yes.
And that's basically what's on your plate right now, Arissa.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to go back in time with you for a bit to little Arissa. Growing up, did you always want to be in the arts? Were you a musical theater kind of kid? Singer, dancer, actor, anything like that?
Well, I was really lucky. I come from a really artistic family, both in terms of music and visual arts and performing. My dad was in a band for a long time, and my mom is a big arts appreciator and amazing photographer as well. But I was really lucky growing up. I grew up at, Jane and Finch. And I, my mom put me in French immersion first because she knew the value of it. My mom was a teacher. So she really stressed education above all else. So I was in education, or I was in French immersion. And then I auditioned for Claude Watson School for the Arts, which is an elementary school here in Toronto, in North York. Yeah, so both my older sister and I both attended Claude Watson School for the Arts, and I continued on through high school. So I did have that kind of training, the performing arts training, the visual arts training. But even though that was my big focus, I was a visual arts major, but, you know, doing all the dancing and the school shows and all that stuff on the side, I always felt like I was a better writer than anything else. So, you know, I kind of psyched myself out from being, you know, a creative writer or a novelist. So, you know, you're told if you want to write and have a job when you leave university, then you have to go into journalism. So, but what, you know, I couldn't know even then, though, that my personality would lend itself to journalism so well. I'm a very curious person. I'm very interested in the shades of gray between black and white.
Right.
I love people. I love talking to people. I love talking to strangers and hearing their perspectives. And I have a lot of empathy. So it turned out that journalism was absolutely right for me. And it wasn't until, I think, third year at Carleton University that we started doing, you know, more specialized courses, and I did TV. And I was like, oh, my gosh, like, it tied in everything I loved. Mm-hmm. It tied in writing. It tied in tight deadlines and that rush of the deadlines that you get. It tied in my curiosity and the performing aspect of being comfortable on camera and being able to speak to people and try to get something that, you know, somebody might not give up to somebody else asking the questions. So that's sort of how I ended up in journalism, mm-hmm. and in television. And this has been, like, working on Big Brother Canada has been such a gift. There's so many amazingly talented professionals who work on this show and really care about the product that they produce.
Sure.
And we also have something really special in the show, that it is so diverse. We have people from so many different backgrounds and ages and races and religions. And I think that is really at the heart of what Canada is. And I think that's what makes our version of Big Brother so special for the Big Brother fans around the world.
So I want to talk about U8 TV and the Lofters.
Ooh, the Lofters.
Was that Canada's very first reality TV show?
That was. So that was way back in 2001, which, mm-hmm. you know, I tell, you know, teenagers now, they have no idea that we had anything like this way back when. But this right. was after the very first Survivor had aired in the U.S., the very first Big Brother in the U.S., the very first Amazing Race. So it really was the dawn of the modern reality TV age. Our show was more like Real World. So it wasn't, there wasn't a prize at the end. It was for a year, and we weren't completely locked in the house. Mm-hmm. For a period of time, we could leave and experience the world, but we all worked. We worked at creating an internet television station, so we worked on hosting a bunch of shows on, you know, lifestyle, clubs, DJs, relationships, cooking, indie music. Like, we did all these little shows, and for me, I was in the middle of my fourth year university at Carleton when I got chosen for that show, and I had no idea what that would be like. I mean, this was when reality TV was really in its nascency, so
sure.
it was hard to tell. I feel like now everyone's pretty savvy, and they know mm-hmm. what to expect from going onto a show like this. They've been around for so long. But then people didn't really have a sense of how difficult it could be, or how amazing it could be, or what their reputations would be coming out of that. I, at the time, was a part-time news reporter at a CTV station in Ottawa, which was incredible experience of doing news. But I knew, as I was getting all that incredible experience and so thankful for the chance, that was my first big break in TV, mm-hmm. That I wanted to be in arts and entertainment, because, again, that was my background, and I knew I could bring something to the table, having been an artist and been trained. So that's, you know, that was going to be my way of sort of staying in touch with the artistic community, even if I was in journalism. So when it wasn't the living on camera part that drew me, it was the fact that we were going to be working on making all these little shows. And I was like, okay, that's how I can develop an arts and entertainment reel that could, you know, I could use later on.
Right.
But I learned a lot about myself through that experience. I learned a lot about Toronto through that experience. I mean, I'm from North York, but I was very sheltered. I mean, I was in all the extracurriculars, so I wasn't up to no good at all. I was a very good girl. So I learned a lot about the world very, very quickly and under a lot of pressure. Being under a microscope is something that looks really, really easy, and it's really not. So I try to tell people now who watch Big Brother, they're like, you know, oh, it's sort of the same. I'm like, well, imagine watching live feeds, right? Because we had live feeds from our house. Mm-hmm. Imagine watching live feeds and being able to chat with the people in the house. To, sure. You know how like Twitter can be the place where self-esteem goes to die. Imagine all those people could actually speak to the people in the house at the same time, which was amazing and also terrifying. Mm-hmm. But it was incredible to be part of such an amazing social experiment, and that's the same desire I had for that came into play for Big Brother.
Sure. So speaking of Big Brother, the finale is coming up very soon. It's going to air on Thursday. What are your words when it comes to this season, season five, with both returning players and new players? What are your thoughts?
The only way you can describe it is with the word fire. It's been everything we could ever have dreamed of and more. I mean, with a fifth season, sometimes, you know, shows get into a lull. They could get boring. They could get predictable. And I was so excited by this opportunity to have some of our icons back from seasons past, and then throw them in a house with brand new players who'd also watched them, who knew their games. I knew it was going to be interesting, but, you know, of course, there's always the fear, oh, well, you're stacking the deck, and these returning players are going to obliterate the new players because they've got more experience, they're better at the game, and that's absolutely not what happened. We were week by week, we've been surprised, we've been amazed, we've been horrified. Incredible strategy we've seen this year. We've also seen some crazy mistakes, which to me as a viewer, I love a perfectly executed move as much as I love a mistake, especially when that mistake is made by someone who knows better, which has happened several times this season. It's been such a pleasure to host this season because, you know, it really reminded me that we have a family. And now, in terms of, you know, former house guests, we've got, what, almost near 80?
Right.
A lot of people. And we have built this family, making this incredible show that's been such a pleasure for people to watch as well. So me, being somebody who works on the show and being somebody who loves the show and watches the show, mm-hmm. I could not be happier. I'm thrilled.
So my last question for you, Arissa Cox, host of Big Brother Canada, who would you like to see win out of the remaining house guests? Who would you like to see win Big Brother Canada 5?
Okay, well, let me tell you this. I am a mom. I have two kids, and I kind of see the house guests as children, which is funny because they're grown ass people. I have such a fondness for anyone who would dare to put themselves out there in the way that these house guests do. I don't take it lightly. I don't see it as, oh, they just want attention, and so therefore you can dismiss how difficult this is. I don't. I have a lot of empathy for them. So I see them as family. I see them as people who drive me nuts sometimes, but I love deeply. And so it's very, very difficult for me to find, you know, to choose a favorite in that way, because when anybody is evicted, and I mean any player is evicted, my heart breaks a little. And in the last four times I called out who won the season, my heart has soared, no matter who it is, because I know what that means. I know what that means to crush a dream or to bring a dream to life.
Right.
So I can't say who exactly I'm rooting for, because I really am rooting for all of them. We've got one of the best final fours we have ever seen on Big Brother, and I mean anywhere.
Yeah.
We've got two men, two women, two newbies, two vets, and may the best player win.
Arissa Cox, host of Big Brother Canada, thank you so much for being who you are, for representing, and thank you so much for your time.
Oh gosh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thanks so much, Mark.
Well, there you go. That was my exit interview from Big Brother Canada. This is the finale week of Big Brother Canada, so you can tune in on Wednesday at 9 p.m. and Thursday at 7 p.m. for the two-hour finale on Global TV. When I return, What Love Would Want.
Hey, this is Paul Bellini, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 on your FM dial.
Welcome back. You're listening to CIUT's gay radio show, Rainbow Country, and I'm your host, Mark Tara. So earlier today, I was fortunate enough to interview Tim Arnold, who is a UK recording artist, and he has written an anthem that's an anthem for sexuality, for gender and racial equality. And the track is called What Love Would Want, hashtag What Love Would Want. So here's what's happening tomorrow on Wednesday. There's essentially a meetup, and then they're marching down, they're walking down to Yonge Dundas Square. And I think it's going to be like beautiful weather. So everyone's encouraged to come down for 1:45 and meet at the Barber Hall Park at the 519 Community Center for about 1:45. And there's going to be a sing-along from 2 to 3. And then they're walking down to Yonge Dundas Square. And I believe that Tim Arnold will also be performing at Yonge Dundas Square, I believe. I'm not 100% sure, but I think so. So again, come down to the 519 Barber Hall Park for 1:45. And be part of this experience. And Tim Arnold with What Love Would Want. Have a listen.
From my door, the barriers you see I never saw.
Squad!
listening to CIUT 89.5 FM, and this is the station's gay radio show, Rainbow Country. And that was Tim Arnold with What Love Would Want. And hopefully, if you have some time tomorrow, it's going to be a beautiful day, I believe. Head down to the 519 Community Center for about 1:45 and partake, march on down to Young Dundas Square and be part of this event. Hashtag What Love Would Want. When I return, Carol Pope.
Hi guys, this is Mika Barnes. Very happy to be with you on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's great to be anywhere these days, isn't it, Carol Pope?
I guess so. It's great to be alive.
So you have 3 Junos to your credit.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the Junos, Carol Pope?
I don't really have any since I haven't lived here since 89.
Do you think they're still relevant?
I think they're relevant for people who care about them, but I watched them for a second and I was like, what the fuck? I think the last time I went to the Junos, my girlfriend at the time was writing for them, and I was in the 90s, and it was like I think Shania Twain and Alanis Morissette and Anne Murray and KD were all on it. I'm like, that is like, can there be more of that? But yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're, you know, I mean, they haven't helped me. I mean, it's nice having them, but right. they haven't really helped my career.
Okay.
I don't think here or in America. I mean, right. but I'm honored to have received them. And it was, I think they, I'm just saying they were more fun in the 80s when we were crazier.
Right.
And it was more random and, you know, and now it's like very slick packaging, yes. which I didn't like. And I didn't like that comedian. I was like, I couldn't watch that guy, that right. co-host. He was embarrassing. Mm. Sorry, dude, but wow.
So let's move on.
Okay.
Let's move on to Sessions X. This, you and your band played 8 songs that were filmed. They look great. Your band sounds great. It's online. It's on, if you Google Sessions X, Carol Pope, it'll come up. It's on Vimeo. How did that come about, Carol Pope?
I met Gavin Brown, who has produced a lot of people like Metric and I don't know who else. He's worked with a lot of, he's worked with the Bare Naked Ladies
right.
and a lot of bands. And so he asked us to do it.
Right.
And
you guys filmed your performance?
Yeah, they film. It's like really weird. You're like in there. It was like wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. You go in, start recording, and they're like, so many people, so many dudes and cameras happening at the same time,
right.
and we just bang it out. But it sounds good. I have to say that
it does.
Yeah,
and you look fantastic.
I look all right, but they shot me from my bad side, which makes me crazy.
Do you have a bad side, Carol Pope?
I do. I like my right side better.
Okay, I hear you.
You know what I'm talking about.
We all have
girl
a favorite side.
Yeah.
So another project I came across, Rattlesnake Love, by the Cousins, who are real-life cousins. There's Harlan Williams, who's an actor and a comedian, and Kevin Hearn from the Bare Naked Ladies and the Rio Statics. Talk to me about that collaboration. How did that come about?
Rattlesnake Love, down in the bayou. Crazy when you wrap that thing around me. Down in the bayou. Shake that snake thing. Shake that snake thing. Shake it. Down in the bayou. I love to hate you. Down in the bayou.
Well, that actually happened through Gavin Brown again because he was in L.A. and I went to the studio and I mean, I guess he asked me if I wanted to sing on that song, Rattlesnake Love. I mean, I didn't really sing. I just made weird sex. I just did weird snake sex things. And I was like so bitter. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm a lesbian and I'm doing like this straight song with a straight dude.
Yeah, at one point, you were saying in the interview that they did that's on YouTube, you said it got very hetero in here.
Yeah. It's like it's getting very hetero in here. It's so funny because it's the third time I've done something like that.
Right.
But yeah, Harlan is great, and I think he's got an amazing voice. And I think Kevin Hearn is so, you know, talented as a writer and. I guess he produced that album. It just sounds amazing. Mm. I especially like that song. What's it called? Alien Love or something. But yeah, that was just fun. It was so fun. And it was a great experience.
Well, speaking of fun, Carol Pope, I was up late last night, this morning, like 2 o'clock. I started. And I started around 2 a.m. watching a movie called Cruising. from 1980, starring Al Pacino and yourself, Rough Trade, Kevin Staples, were part of the soundtrack. Understand that there's supposed to be an extended soundtrack being released at some point, do you think?
They got in touch with me like 3 years ago, I think, and they said, oh, we were going to release everybody's tracks, because we actually did four tracks right. for that movie, but I don't know what's happened. I mean, it is out on vinyl, but I don't know what happened to the extended thing.
Right.
Yeah, because I talked to them about, you know, we talked about liner notes, and it actually is such a great soundtrack. And it was, I mean, I did it because, you know, Jack Nitzsche was the composer, producer for that. And I'm like, I have to work with him. He's, you know, he did The Shining, and he's done a lot of amazing film scores. And he was quite the character. And also William Friedkin, mm-hmm. you know, did The Exorcist, among other things. But it was quite scandalous at the time because all the gays were upset because, like, you can't be doing a movie about gay serial killers.
Yeah.
But I think it's so camp and great, and Al Pacino is just chews the scenery, and I like, you know, and I like that he gets sucked into the life, and every time I do that song live, I'm like, it's all about handlebar mustaches and flapping ass chaps.
There's a lot of ass in that movie. There's
yeah.
a lot of like naked asses in that movie.
And I know, and apparently there's half an hour to 45 minutes of like really hardcore stuff that they shot that wasn't included that
really?
Is out there somewhere that we want to see, don't we?
I would.
I do, too. I'm just curious.
So you've got the Rattlesnake Love collaboration. You have the Sessions X. And you've got your new EP, Music for Lesbians, your last full-length record, 2011, Landfall. Do you feel like there's a resurgence in Carol Pope music, in Rough Trade music? Do you feel that? Do you sense that around you at all?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, people are all, you know, people who are all nostalgic are into Rough Trade, but I it's interesting when we do a Rough Trade gig, like the audience is, the age span of the audience is like from, you know, maybe 20s to 60s or something.
Right.
So that's interesting. I mean, the Rough Trade stuff gets a lot of airplay, and, you know, I'm constantly trying to work my solo stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think people are still interested in me, and
it's still relevant.
Yeah. And it was like really good for me to go. I went and performed with Ben, whose name I cannot, last name I can't pronounce, from Billy Talent.
Like, okay.
At a party, and people were like blown away because we sang Ohio, and people were like, "What the what?" So, you know, I think I'm still valid as a performer, and I'm also writing with a lot of artists.
Right.
I just wrote something with Clara Venice. I don't know if you know who she is, but you should check her out. Mm. She plays Theremin.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, and I'm going to write with Ray Spoon, and I'm writing with Kevin Hearn, and just want to release a new EP.
Yeah. Because last year in 2016, yourself, Kevin Staples, Rough Trade, you guys celebrated 40 years.
Yeah.
And that was actually done at the Phoenix Concert Theater here in Toronto.
Yeah.
So Music for Lesbians, the series,
yes,
is happening. So what made you want to do Music for Lesbians, the series?
And it's so funny because I'd been thinking that I would like to be curating artists because there's so many great lesbian artists or women's bands or trans artists who, you know, are kind of flying under the radar. And so I was like, yeah, let's do it.
So how long has that, have you always had that idea in your mind?
No, it just like came into my head like a few months ago. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I want to curate people. If I like a band or an artist, I try and talk them up, or I try and write with them or something.
Right.
And it's just, there's a lot of great women bands out there.
That need a platform.
They need a platform that are interesting. And certainly I think that we need to hear music from the female perspective.
Mm.
You know, because everything is really too penis-y for me. Art in general. Just everything is very, very penis-y at the moment. And it's the last gasp of the penis-y thing right now. Politically, you know what I mean.
I hear you, girl.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm fond of the penis-y.
No, I know you are fond, but I mean,
I hear your perspective as well, and I respect that.
Yeah, I'm talking about straight, white dude penis-y.
Right.
And, you know, straight man penis-y. I mean, they just like run the whole entertainment industry and art and everything. And
have you come up with a lot of that in your, you know, your experience in the music industry, coming up against sexism, ageism, that sort of thing?
Oh, fuck yeah.
And how do you deal with that when that presents itself?
You know, I'm not trying to prove anything anymore to anybody, and now I'm just like, you're a fucking asshole, and I don't want to ever talk to you again. I mean, I just don't have time for it. I think that, and a lot of female artists feel the same, we're just, or lesbian or whatever, straight, whatever, we're just going to like make our music and do our art, and, you know, you just have to get out there and do it, and
do it to the best of your ability.
Because it's an outlet for you. And
so how are you navigate? Because when you first started, the music industry was totally different. And now there's more access to commercially available equipment where people can literally record in their bedrooms and put things out independently on iTunes or CD Baby, that sort of thing. So how do you like the way that the industry has evolved to the way that it is in 2017 compared to, you know, like from 1976, that sort of thing?
Well, I think it's a kind of come around full circle because, you know, when we started, we were like an indie band, and we did everything ourselves, only we actually had to design posters and put posters up, but now you have to you know, have this whole social media
right.
presence, which is really extremely exhausting, and I hate it. But you kind of have to do – you have to not only be an artist but know how to promote yourself unless you can get somebody to do it, which I'm working on. Because it just it really is soul-sucking and takes up a lot of time. But, I think – it's great for new artists, but there's also like a pile of steaming turd-like music out there too. I mean,
and what about radio airplay? What are your thoughts on that? Because I'll tell you, like here at CIUT, we play Rough Trade, we play Carol Pope on my show. I play it, but we're just one station.
Yeah.
How are you finding the response across Canada or in the U.S., that sort of thing?
I get some. I mean, I know I'm on some kind of internet radio, but I don't know what it is.
Right.
I mean, I think people have to like really discover me, and I'm really pissed off with NPR in the States because I've sent a lot of my music to KCRW, and they've never played my stuff. And
really,
that's really annoying because I sent them Landfall, and I'm singing with Rufus Wainwright. Can you not play this track?
Right.
But maybe it's too much. It's too edgy. It's too political. Only it's like way beyond appropriate for what's going on right now.
Mm.
So yeah, I mean, I don't worry that much about that, and I guess the biggest amount of exposure I've had in the past couple of years is, you know, having Lesbians in the Forest on Transparent. I mean, that was
exactly
pretty amazing. That was an amazing experience.
How did that come to be?
Well, because Peaches wrote the rap in the middle of that song,
right.
And she's really good friends with Jill Soloway. And anyway, she introduced Jill to my work and that song, and it was just perfect for the scene they were shooting, which was at a women's festival, kind of a mock Michigan women's festival. So that's how that happened. And it was just so wonderful to be on that set. And, you know, I love what they're doing and how inclusive they are.
Right.
And there isn't anything else. Talk about the female gaze. Well, that is certainly all about that. Transparent is all about that.
Yeah. Well, Carol Pope, it's been a pleasure. And for all things Pope, go to carolpope.com. She's on Twitter, all that sort of good stuff. Thank you for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. So fun.
Hello, Toronto. It's party time, and I'm Julie Lee.
I'm DJ Dallas.
You're listening to CIUT
89.5 FM.
You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM, and this is the station's gay radio show, Rainbow Country, and I'm your host, Mark Tara. So that was my spotlight on Canadian music icon, Carol Pope. So let's change things up a bit, and let's have some music from an American artist, Rye Daisies, a trans recording artist.
See what's inside of my mind. extra fries. Butter add-on. Three apple pies. Deep fry. And a 10-piece. And can I get a Diet Coke with that?
Well, maybe you can, girl. That's Rye Daisies. From Michigan, I believe. And she's been a guest on the show. Love her music. That's Feeding the Beast, Rye Daisies. And welcome back. You're listening to CIUT's gay radio show, Rainbow Country. And I'm your host, Mark Tara. Let's get social. Get interactive on Twitter, on Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. Send me an email. Want to be on the show? Want me to feature your music? That sort of good stuff. Mark@marktara.com. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes as well as on podomatic.com. And again, everything is hooked up through my website, marktara.com. Next week, Inspired Media Inc.'s CEO, Antoine Elashim, will be my guest. Inspired Media Inc. For the first season has brought Rainbow Country to you. And I'm going to be changing things up for season two. It'll be fun. But finally, I want to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you. Taking us out, Alphaville, big in Japan.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Tory, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. Mm.